a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Judiciary Committee of the Senate will come to order. Good morning, everyone. Welcome. Reminders, silence your communications devices, sign in at the podium if you're going to testify. Madam Secretary, call the roll, please.
Senators Bradford.
Here.
Heinert.
Here.
Monroe.
Here.
Rush.
Here.
Valley.
Here.
Norstrup.
Here.
Teason.
Here.
There is a quorum.
Is there a motion to approve the minutes from Thursday, January 29th?
So moved.
Motion by Valley, seconded by Norstrup. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, our order of business today, we are going to move 1065 to the top at the request of the sponsor due to other bills and other committees, and then we'll follow that with the Chief Justice Bill 61, 62, and 63. Any other discussion before we move into bill consideration? All right. House Bill 1065, an act to revise certain provisions related to voting trusts and agreements. Senator Rush, good morning.
Mr. Chairman.
Proponents.
Senators, I'm Senator Rush from District 17, and here speaking in favor of House Bill 1065. I assume that probably none of
Is your mic on, sir?
I assume that none of you have ever used a voting trust, but it is a possibility that's used in some complex financial transactions, and I'll maybe let Mr. Barnett explain it. But basically, if you're a stockholder, you can agree with other people to put your stock ownership in trust, and for security purposes, for voting purposes, there's a number of different reasons that you could do that. But anyway, South Dakota has attempted to make our business laws conducive to businesses so that South Dakota is an attractive place to locate and conduct business. In 2005, we enacted the Model Business Corporation Act, which contained provisions dealing with voting trusts. At that time, the Model Business Corporation Act limited the existence of voting trusts to a 10-year period. Since then, the Uniform Laws Commission has revisited that area and determined that there's probably not any real reason to limit them to 10 years, that somebody who is the owner of stock that they're contemplating putting in a voting trust should have the discretion to do with their property what they want to. If they want to put it in a trust for less than 10 years or less or more than 10 years, they should have that freedom. And so the amendment or changes to the uniform law basically takes that 10-year limitation out of there and allows the shareholders to set the duration of the voting trust however long they want it. And the Business Law Committee of the State Bar has reviewed the recommendation and endorsed it, and the State Bar unanimously approved that last year at their bar convention. So I will stand by for any questions that anyone may have about that.
Thank you. We'll take further proponents for House Bill 1065. Good morning, Mr. Barnett.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Tom Barnett representing the State Bar. I'm simply going to expand very, very briefly on the comments by Senator Rush. Voting trusts are created for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it's so that they pool those resources and they hand control or the voting over to a mutually selected trustee whose philosophy is consistent with the group who are joining that trust agreement. In this complex world that we live in, oftentimes there are long-term financial arrangements which extend beyond the 10 years and which a voting trust is a key aspect of that or can be. So we're simply giving the flexibility to those shareholders to determine, perhaps with the benefit of their creditors, on how long that trust should exist. The Uniform Laws Commission which South Dakota participates in, made this recommended change in 2013. So we studied it, brought it to our people in 2014, as Senator Rush indicated, and now we're here today and ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponents for House Bill 1065? Are there other proponents for House Bill 1065? Seeing none, are there any opponents for House Bill 1065? Opponents? Seeing no opponents, questions from the committee? Any questions from the committee? Senator Valley.
Mr. Barnett, was the reason for the 10-year limitation, what happens in the death of the principal that put it in the trust? Is that taken care of in the original agreement, or does the trust survive and it goes on forever and ever, and then how do the new members get started? I'm wondering if that was a reason for the 10-year limit.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The original Model Business Corporation Act picked 10 years as an arbitrary number, and it's been in the code since 1965. And it's only, like I said, in 2013 that they realized that that's out of date, that there are many financial arrangements that need to extend beyond 10 years, and that's where this came from. As far as what happens on the death of a shareholder, either the trust agreement itself controls, or in the alternative, their estate plan may well transfer those share interest, even though they're in trust, to their heirs, so that the trust maintains the original agreement between the other shareholders, but the beneficial owner wouldn't obviously go to their heirs.
If I may, just so I have an understanding of it, is a trust then perpetual forever?
Mr. Chair?
Go ahead.
The trust exists for as long as the shareholders determine. We allow in South Dakota perpetual trusts, but the term or duration of the trust, if this bill passes, is determined by those shareholders. It could be 11 years, it could be 21 years, and there could be a variety of reasons why they would select a particular length of time.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions? Okay, Senator Heinert. A very dapper Senator Heinert, I might add.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for those kind words. My question is, I think it goes along with Senator Valley's, but I don't see how you get out. If you signed a trust for 21 years, you said, and then all of a sudden it's moving in the direction, aren't you locked into it for 21 years? I don't see where you come out.
Mr. Barnett, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Heiner, we'll take your example. We set up, Senator Rush and I both own shares, and we enter into this agreement, and we set it out for 21 years. I could die 2 years from now. Those shares are going to still be held in trust for those 21 years, unless by the terms of our own agreement that the death of one dissolves it more quickly. Otherwise, the agreement that we have entered into and set it for 21 would go for 21, and then I would assume at that point those voting shares would come back to me, however many I had, and the remaining would go back to Senator Rush.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, I understand, you know, in the event of a death, but I just don't see where maybe I changed my mind. I want to invest in something else. How do I stop this trust?
Chairman?
Go ahead.
You can't. Unless everybody that's a participant in that trust agrees. The purpose of putting it in trust with the terms and conditions that we as shareholders determine sets out all the conditions and the duration that we are agreeing to, and there probably are many good reasons why we would agree to a certain length of time. For some, it's as simple as the ability to be able to call a special meeting because you have enough shares in that trust to force a meeting. The other thing, Senator, is that we may set up a trust and it only goes for 4 years or 5 years or 6 years. What we're trying to do is address those issues where shareholders need a longer term than 10 years, and we want to give them the flexibility. As far as the individual terms and conditions of that agreement or trust, that's up for us to decide. And in that context, Senator, it's no different than any other trust that the South Dakota citizens set up. We decide what's going into the trust and how it's going to be handled, and many trusts have a certain period of time, and then they will dissolve per my determination when I set up the trust.
Thank you.
If I could.
Senator Rush, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman and other senators, maybe to answer your question a little bit better, you know, this isn't a lot of different than a standard trust. And in a standard trust, if you lock up property without an escape clause for a certain period of time, you're probably locked into that. And there may be reasons for that. You may have children who are not very responsible with their money, and so you definitely want to tie it up for 21 years. And you don't want them to have an escape clause. But it's, you know, if it's a possibility that you may want to get out of a trust, you need to write the escape clause into it. And if it's not in there, then probably you can't get out of it. And that's one of the benefits of a trust. And that's the standard trust. This being the voting trust is, you know, a little bit different, but would be governed by the same trust laws.
Thank you. Any further questions? Seeing none, we'll close public testimony, move to committee discussion and action.
Move to pass.
Second.
Motion by Senator Valley to pass, seconded by Senator Monroe. Discussion on the motion. Senator Valley?
I think we've covered it fairly well, and I think I can understand the reason to give flexibility for trusts, and that's all we're doing. We're just giving them so that they can go beyond 10 years. So I think that sounds reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you. Other discussion on the do pass motion? Seeing none, the question is do pass on House Bill 1065. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Bradford?
Aye.
Heinert?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Norstrup?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Seven ayes.
Motion carried.
I would move it going on the consent calendar, Mr. Chairman.
Motion for consent. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Norstrup. Any discussion on the consent motion? Hearing none, those in favor of consent say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried. House Bill 1065 will go to the floor on consent. All right. Thank you. We'll move now to House Bill 1061, a bill to repeal an outdated and obsolete provision related to transferring cases from inferior court to circuit courts. Mr. Sadasan, good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Greg Sadasan, State Court Administrator for the Unified Judicial System. House Bill 1061 essentially seeks to repeal 1616.9.1. A little bit of history on our court system. Prior to 1975, there was various levels of courts throughout our state. There were county courts, district courts, municipal courts, justice of the peace courts, and police magistrate courts. And in 1973, the voters approved a revision to our Constitution that created essentially a unified judicial system. And so that was enacted in 1975. The purpose of this statute that we believe is outdated and obsolete was to say all the records and all those cases that existed in those other layers of courts need to be transferred to the new circuit court system that we have and magistrate court system. And so 40 years ago, that made a lot of sense. We needed to make sure everything got where it needed to go and cases could continue in the courts that then existed after the data transfer. And so I guess I'm here to say after 40 years, we've got that accomplished, and this provision is no longer necessary. And that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponent testimony for House Bill 1061. Other proponent testimony? Seeing none, is there opponent testimony for House Bill 1061? Opponent testimony? Seeing no opponent testimony, questions for Mr. Sadezan on 1061? Any questions? Seeing no questions, we'll close public testimony and move to discussion and action from the committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rush.
Contrary to youngsters like Mr. Sadezan, who probably weren't here 40 years ago, I was. And, you know, when we did make that changeover from a multi different courts, there did have to be some stopgap provisions to cover exactly how the authority would switch. And as he said, that was 40 years ago. And all of those cases have been disposed of, hopefully, that were pending 40 years ago. And we don't really need this anymore.
Thank you for that update. Other discussion or action?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nordstrom.
Move do pass.
Motion do pass on House Bill 1061. Is there a second from Senator Bradford? Discussion on the motion? Seeing no discussion, the question is do pass on House Bill 1061. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senators. Bradford?
Aye.
Heinert?
Aye.
Monroe?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Nordstrom?
Aye.
Thiessen?
Aye.
7-0.
Motion carried.
Move consent.
Motion from Senator Valley, consent, seconded by Senator Nordstrom. Any discussion on the consent motion? Seeing none, those in favor of consent say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Motion carried. House Bill 1061 will go to the floor on consent. Moving now to House Bill 1062, a bill to revise certain provisions relating to jury selection. Proponent testimony, House Bill 1062. Welcome back, Mr. Sadezan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Greg Sadezan, State Court Administrator for the Unified Judicial System. And I'll just note for the record that both the UJS and I celebrated our 40th birthday in January, so I may be older than you think. House Bill 1062, this is really a follow-up on a change in the law that was made by the legislature just last session. And what it does is it recognizes the fact that juries are selected now through electronic processes, utilizing a randomized computer software system. A clerk of court will enter how many jurors do I need to create this panel, and then that creates a list of potential jurors that are used to create the jury list and the jury panels. So last session, there's really two jury selection processes. There's the master jury list, which is the big list, I guess is how I would call it every year. There's a master jury list that's selected in the fall. And then from that, you select the smaller juries, your grand and your petit juries that are kind of the smaller juries that will rotate for the different panels. And so what this proposal does is it mirrors the selection process that electronic selection process is used to pull from that master jury list to create the smaller pools in the same way the master jury list is created. And so this would really modernize the jury selection provisions. The current provisions really describe the process where the clerk of court was using essentially a bingo wheel to draw names out. And so current law envisions that the clerk provide notice to the Register of Deeds, the county treasurer, and the county sheriff to come and assist in that process. And so now, because the law requires it, our clerk of courts do have those three other county officials, and we refer to them as the drawing officers, come to the office and watch her essentially press her or him, press enter on the computer to create the list. And so we think it's outdated. This would really mirror the changes that were made last year for the master jury list to use that same process to create the jury panels. So with that, I'll certainly stand by for any questions. Thank you.
Any questions for Mr. Sadezan, Senator Bradford?
Electronically, how is that actual thing done? And then second part of that question, is the federal jury list done the same way?
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bradford. So the software process, it's some sort of very complicated algorithm, and it's software designed especially to create kind of a randomized list, and it's used by a number of state courts. And really what the clerk needs to enter is how many people they want in the jury, and it creates a randomized list to select jurors. And I am not aware of how the federal system selects juries. I would assume that it's a similar process, but I don't know that for sure.
Other questions? A quick one from me. So can you remind us, what is the source of the master list?
Yep.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the master list is compiled from two sources, voter registration records in the county and driver's licensing information in the county.
Thank you. Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Greg, I just have to ask this because I'm me, but does anybody have a look at this big, huge pool of names before this button's pushed? The clerk of courts obviously is going to be doing this and can do it at any time. And are these names, the names of the master list, available in an editable form? You understand what I'm saying?
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair, Senator. The master list is compiled electronically. As far as the list itself, are you asking if the list is available so you could look at the names in each county?
No.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Okay. If I was doing this, I'd be looking for the master list to take my buddies out that paid me $100. You know? Now, I get the master list. I get you push the button and it causes these random selections by the computer, and I just don't understand if there's a possibility of interference with this list anywhere along that line.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, the master, once the list is created, the clerk and the county auditor have to review that list to see if there are people that come back on the list that shouldn't be. For instance, if your name was selected, Senator, and the clerk realized that she had just entered a judgment for a felony conviction the last month, she would know, I need to strike that name from the list. And so they work with the auditor's office to vet that process. The clerk does have to verify that they selected in accord with the process established by the statutes. And so it is a process that they're held accountable for through the statutory framework.
Thank you.
Greg, do you know if the master list a public document?
I'm not certain on that, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
I've never been asked.
Senator Valley.
Driver's license and what was the other one?
Voter registration records, Senator.
Voters registration and driver. We leave out a fair amount of people then. Okay.
Senator Bradford. Any other questions? Thank you. Other proponent testimony for House Bill 1062. Is there other proponent testimony? Morning, sir.
Morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Roger Tellinghues, and registered lobbyist on behalf of the South Dakota Association of County Officials, which represents the auditors, treasurers, and registers of deeds. And as you'll note from the bill that you're considering this morning, we're proposing to eliminate the participation of the treasurers and the registers of deed. And I can just tell you that we support this bill because from a practical standpoint, neither the register of deeds or treasurers have been involved in the process since it became an electronic process. And there's really no need for them to continue to be shown in the statute as participating in this selection process. So for that, we'd urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Further proponent testimony, House Bill 1062. Is there other proponent testimony? Seeing none, is there opponent testimony, House Bill 1062? Opponent testimony. Seeing no opponent testimony, is there any other questions before we close public testimony? Any questions? Seeing none, public testimony is closed, and we'll move to committee discussion and action. Senator Rush.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been involved in this process for many years, sat in there and watched the designated officials in there while the bingo wheel was turned, and they drew names out of that for many, and also been involved since they went to it electronically. And they're at, you know, the Register of Deeds, the Treasurer, and the Sheriff have absolutely no function now that there's electronics and are busy people on their own. So there's certainly no reason that they need to sit there and watch the list printed out.
Thank you. Further discussion or action?
Move to pass.
Senator Valley moves do pass, seconded by Senator Nordstrom. Discussion on the do pass motion. Senator Bradford.
I have just one little comment, and I'm going to ask the good senator, Judge. Are these, when that first list comes out, are those people notified?
I do not think they're notified until their name is on the final list.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on the do pass motion, and Senator Valley?
No, I think we've moved into an electronic world, and as long as there seems to be no problems with the way it is administered, I think this is the way we need to go. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Seeing none, the motion is do pass on House Bill 1062. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Bradford.
Aye.
Heinert.
Aye.
Monroe.
Aye.
Rush.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Nordstrom.
Aye.
Thiessen.
Aye. Motion carried.
Chairman.
Motion from Nordstrom to consent, seconded by Senator Monroe. Any discussion on the consent motion? Seeing none, those in favor of the consent motion say aye. Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried. House Bill 1062 will go to the floor on consent. And finally, we go to House Bill 1063, a bill to revise the notice provisions for the name change of a minor child. Proponent testimony, House Bill 1063, Mr. Sadison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Greg Sadison for the Unified Judicial System. I'll just start before I start talking about this bill. Think for maybe a moment, if you have kids, how important it was deciding what their name was going to be. That's really what this bill is about. It's pretty simple, but we think it's a very important change, and it's in response to some situations that our circuit court judges have seen on a fairly consistent basis. So current law requires, if you're going to change the name of a minor child, there's only two things that have to happen. You have to have been a resident of a county for 6 months in South Dakota, and then you have to put a notice in a legal newspaper in that county for 4 consecutive weeks that you want to change that minor child's name. There is no requirement that if you're married, if you're separated, if the father is the next county over, there is no requirement of any personal notification to the other parent. And so what our judges have seen a number of cases would be a parent takes out an ad in a paper, and maybe there's more than one legal newspaper in that county. The parent picks the newspaper that's actually least likely to reach the other parent. If the parents reside in different counties, there is no requirement that that parent do anything that requires any sort of notification, either personally or in the county of that parent's residence. And so, really, I think this lends itself to some gamesmanship when you have parents, perhaps in very contentious situations, and they use or could use the name of the child as a weapon's probably not the right word, but I think it means something to the other parent when changes are made to that child's name. I think, and so this really recognizes that and would require that if you're going to change the name, of a minor child that you have to personally serve the other parent with notice so they can have an opportunity to come and be heard on whether or not they think that name change is appropriate or not. And I really, from a system perspective, this happens a number of times, and frankly, a lot of our judges would hold the proceeding up until that they're assured that some sort of notice had been provided to that other parent, because I think there's a recognition that publishing something like this in the newspaper is not the most likely way to get that information to the other parent. And so we've had those cases where parents don't find out until after the fact that the person's name has been changed. At that point, they try to do something, but they followed the legal process. And they just didn't read the newspaper, and they didn't get the notice. Whether or not they should have gotten that notice probably is debatable based on the circumstances. But we think that this is an important change that would make it very clear that other parent should get that opportunity, assuming their parental rights have not been terminated. And there is a provision that indicates that as well. So that's the background and the reason for the proposal, and I'd ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Before you leave, maybe you or maybe Senator Rush, it's pursuant to 15-6-4, the process for serving the summons, or I'm sure there's a process for if you can't find the person or whatever. If you could go through that, we'd appreciate hearing that.
Yep.
Let's ask Mr. Sadezan to describe that, and then if you had a follow-up, we'll do it. Thank you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, 15-6-4 provides the general framework for how you serve someone. There's a number of ways to accomplish service, and it can vary based on the circumstances. A couple of them would be you would have the sheriff come and serve the papers. You can have the papers left at the person's residence with the person of suitable age. You can mail it to that person and ask them to admit service. And it kind of works through the steps. If the person can't be found and they're in-state, this would also apply to out-of-state. So if you think about a parent out-of-state, probably not going to read that local county newspaper and get the notice, but this would require that you would go to that other jurisdiction and accomplish that personal service process. And at some point in the process, if you can't find that person, there are provisions for service by publication or is directed by the court. And so you would have instances, there may be very legitimate instances where you can't accomplish service because that other parent just can't be found. And so in that, you would have to go through that process for publication. 15-6-4, it's a very complicated statute. It's broken up into, I think, about 8 subparts, and it just walks through how service is to be accomplished in different scenarios. If that's an appropriate summary, Mr. Chair.
Sure. Did you have a question, Senator Bradford?
I wondered how that affects it. First of all, it would probably have no effect on the reservation itself. That'd be done by tribal court. But I wondered how that affects say children that move off and their notification system is a little different, and so many of our children are named a lot of times for the mother, even though they're living together and they still sign custody and everything. But I wondered how that would affect them.
Go ahead.
Chair, based on this provision and my reading of the service provisions, if the person resided on a reservation, it still would require service. The statute speaks specifically when you're serving in a person residing in Indian country. The summons should be served by a person not a party to the action, who at the time of making such service is an elector of the state. So it certainly contemplates that if the other parent does reside on the reservation, they would also receive this notice. And likewise, if they left the reservation, it would be necessary to go through the steps to try to effectuate that service for any parent.
Other questions?
Accomplish.
Seeing none, are there other proponents to House Bill 1063? Other proponents? Seeing no other proponents, are there any opponents? Any opponents for House Bill 1063? Seeing none, any further questions? Seeing no questions, we'll move to discussion and action from the committee.
Chairman, I move House Bill 1063 do pass.
Second.
Motion by Senator Monroe do pass, seconded by Senator Valley. Discussion on the motion, Senator Monroe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It looks like this is long overdue, and I think that there's probably been a lot of things that could have been changed and a lot of relationships that could have been helped out by having this a long time ago.
Thank you. Other discussion? Senator Rush.
You know, Mr. Chairman, fellow senators, this is an ongoing problem. As Mr. Sadezan indicated, most judges have seen this at one time or the other, and I've seen it a number of times. My own personal policy was, that even though the statute didn't require it, to require that notice be given to the father, which and it wouldn't necessarily apply to the father only, but generally that's what happened. Because this applies to, first names or change of last names. And, some of the changes you regretfully think are done just because of spite. And certainly we see spite in divorce cases. Seems to me that requiring that notice to the father within the service statutes is an appropriate thing, and I would favor passage of this.
Thank you. Any other comments? Senator Bradford.
I should have asked this. Thank you, Mr. Chair. But what about the middle name?
And certainly you could change the middle name, too. And I've seen cases where they're changing the middle name.
Okay. Go ahead.
My adopted son's middle name is changed, and we're having quite a bit of trouble about it. It's on Social Security, it's one, and on according to the original birth certificate, it's different. The middle name, and so it's.
Well, they should be able to get a certified copy of the name change and furnish that to the Social Security Administration, and they should be willing to change that. But I can't speak for the federal government.
Well, I think it was changed. It just was changed, not.
Any other discussion on the do pass motion? Senator Heinert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess before we get too excited, in my local area, there's probably two or three name changes every week in the paper. A lot of our people are going back to their traditional name, which is fine by me. And in many instances, there may be a father on the birth certificate, but has had no contact. And the father is listed, strictly for blood quantum issues. I'm not that excited about this, and I think it's going to make it more difficult for the parent to change the name of the child that, as they see fit. So I won't be supporting this.
Any other comments? Well, I would, I appreciate the fact that the court has recognized this issue, and the former judge commented that even though it wasn't required in statutes, many judges have sought out. There's a 1564 is a well-established process for service. I guess I think that will not unduly slow up the process, and it gives parties that may have an interest in this and will be upset about it if they don't know about it at the time, gives them a chance at least to speak to it. We're talking here about changes for minor children, of course. I appreciate the fact that the court has brought this to our attention, and I think it's a positive change in the court process. Any other discussion before we move to a vote? Seeing none, the question is do pass on House Bill 1063. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Bradford?
Aye.
Heinert?
No.
Monroe?
Aye.
Rush?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Nordstrom?
Aye.
Thiessen?
Aye.
6-1.
Motion carried. All right, before we forget, I've neglected to introduce the pages or have them introduce themselves, so let's hear from our pages who are in their second week already. Can we believe that? Good morning, pages.
Good morning.
I
am Connor Hickman. I'm from Tri-Valley. I am a member of the Air National Guard, so I will take a year off of college to attend basic training in tech school, and then I plan to attend Augustana for pre-medicine.
Sounds good. Welcome. Good morning.
I'm Claire Deuter from Rapid City Stevens High School, and I'm going to SDSU to major in global studies.
Thank you.
Yeah. Very good morning. I'm Veronica Thomas, and I'm a senior as well at Stevens High School in Rapid City, and next year I will be attending the University of Minnesota, Twin Cities. Go Golden Gophers. It's a double major in political science and global studies and minor in Spanish.
Thank you. Thank you for your service to the Senate. Appreciate it. All right. Let's talk briefly about the schedule for upcoming meetings. Now, on Thursday, we plan on doing 97, 98, and 108, which are bills that come from discussions from the Criminal Justice Oversight Committee. These are tweaks, if you would have it, to the Senate Bill 70 that we passed a couple years ago, things that we've seen that need to be adjusted, relatively minor, but we'll discuss those on Thursday. And then we have Senate Bill 95 from Senator Holeen. That bill requires an impact statement. A prison impact statement, which is not yet completed, will list the bill, but if that impact statement is not finished, we'll carry it over, but it will go on the schedule for Thursday. Then we have, I have scheduled 123 from Senator Hunhoff for next Tuesday, a week from today. And then we, at the moment, we have only three other bills on our docket, and I'm working on scheduling those. So the four bills for Thursday, 123 a week from today, and the rest pending. And if you're interested, the pending bills are Senate Bill 154, Senate Bill 162, and House Bill 1065. I'm sure we'll have some more rolling in today, but at the moment, our schedule looks pretty good. All right, any other discussion from the committee before we adjourn for the day? Seeing none, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Motion by Senator Nordstrom, seconded by Senator Monroe. Any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all in favor of adjournment say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?